and welcome to the Happy Hour. I'm your host, Tony Yang, and today joining me, as always, are my fellow compatriots, Alex Cortez and Clark Price. How are you guys doing?
Doing okay. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, I'm fine.
All right. Well, let's go with the topic du jour today. Let's talk about the January 6th hearing. That's kind of... today we heard about the right-wing groups that were planning and probably had some coordination with President Trump in terms of the riots. So I'm going to go with Alex first because I know, Clark, you have a much longer response. So what did you think, Alex?
well, I mean, it's something I've always suspected. It's not much of a stretch that he's been really catering to that group to stoke them up. And at the very minimum, I don't know if there's more sinister coordination. I mean, I had a pretty full day with work, so I didn't get to follow any of the coverage of the hearings. But I mean, it's not shocking. Upsetting, but you know, not shocking.
I didn't find it shocking because I thought the investigation was headed this way anyway, but it's getting closer to, and we'll ask this question later, but we're definitely getting closer to indictments because there's far more coordination than was previously documented. That's for sure. Clark, your thoughts on the hearings today?
Well, I've been studying right-wing movements in the United States for a long time. And it's a journalistic study. So I've interviewed, David Duke, the guy that's behind the White Aryan Resistance. I've also interviewed other kinds of extremists, like Irv Rubin, the head of the JDL, absolutely an extremist. That's a very interesting discussion I could have on that. Also, members of parts of the Nation of Islam, which there are extremist groups in there, and I was a witness to the attempt at assassination of Khalid Muhammad a couple of decades ago, but also, what was his name? Metzger, Tom Metzger, the head of he was the guy that was sued by the Southern Poverty Law Center for getting four racists to murder this guy. I believe he was from Nigeria. And he didn't do it by saying, go get that guy and murder him. He stoked up their racism and their hatred to such a degree that it motivated them to act. And he was sued by the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they won an enormous judgment against him. And the lawsuit was on behalf of the mother of the man who was killed. And the connection that was made was that Metzger was like what is called today a stochastic terrorist. And that is a person who generates terrorism, that is a hate crime related to someone's national status or religious belief or some characteristic of their personality on a larger basis. So it would be terrorism, not necessarily at one person, but intended to create a public response of terror in order to manipulate people for political purposes or religious purposes or whatever it may be. And with that background, I was looking at the rise of Donald Trump, and I noticed that he was a racist long before he ran for president. He was a racist when he called for the death penalty for five black kids who were falsely accused of an attack on a woman. And after they were fully exonerated, he still called for them to be put to death. Also, everything that he did with Barack Obama about his birth certificate, that was completely based on the race of Barack Obama. So then he runs for president, and I watch that spectacle where he comes down the escalator, and they have a bunch of paid actors, out-of-work actors holding up sign, yay for Trump, things like that. If you don't, if you think I'm just saying that to disparage Donald Trump, Google it. Google the Trump escalator actors. And you will see that they were, and journalists interviewed them. And the thing about Donald Trump was established as he was a liar, he was a racist, he was a confabulator, and he would put on a show to manipulate the audience that was the American people. And so nothing from that trajectory until his coup d'etat attempt against the government of the United States, with all of its history, its greatness, and even its further, its potential to become a more perfect union. He would take all of that down for himself, for his greed, for his unworthy appetite to rule and control and own everything. Donald Trump is a vile and despicable man whose life is nothing but a slime trail of vile and despicable nonsense and garbage. And here he is, having conned his way into the presidency, having attempted, and in that process, as president, violated all kinds of laws, and then committing the ultimate crime against the United States. And so when you say, oh, Cassidy Hutchinson, bombshell, and the hearings today, bombshells, and the connections to the right wing, bombshell, I'm not boasting, because I don't think it's anything to boast about, because it's so obvious. But this is who he is, was, and will ever be. And he has committed a mountain of crime. So when you say, Tony, that we're getting closer, it's getting closer to an indictment, what I'm thinking is, the person I would like to indict is Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland has almost reached the apex of the worst attorney I have ever seen. And I've seen billboard attorneys. I've seen attorneys go to jail. I've seen attorneys involved in rapes and thefts of various sorts. I've also seen them do gallant, heroic things. But Merrick Garland is not gallant, nor is he heroic, nor is he worthy of even being in the bar. He is a utter dereliction of duty. And if you're saying, well, he didn't have the ability to see all of this evidence, he has an army of investigators. He has something you may have heard about called the FBI. He absolutely is as derelict as you can possibly be, because he is a frightened, cowardly man who does not have the courage to be an American who is in charge of the Justice Department. He has failed on both accounts. He should be fired. And why is it that Biden's approval ratings are so low? And that why is it there are nationwide media discussions on where did Biden go wrong? Biden went wrong when he listened to Chuck Schumer, who I think is a halfwit, and took his urgent advice that he should compensate Merrick Garland for being shunted aside by Mitch McConnell and not getting a hearing when he was nominated for Supreme Court, and give him the job of Attorney General. Because it's just such a nice thing to do. Well, now I'm thinking he should never have been nominated for a Supreme Court, because he is an empty suit, a coward, and I would say a traitor to the United States, a person who was loyal to this country and its values and its rule of law, would have done something to enforce the rule of law, a first crime an individual has ever committed against this country. Merrick Garland should be fired now. I don't want to see him leap into action. I don't trust him. Why would anyone trust him?
Well, and I think that's the question at this point. So I don't know what to do. But I will lead with one bit of good news this week, which is if you take a look at 538's analysis of the polls, post-Dobbs, most of the generic ballots have shifted in the direction of the Democrats. This looks like it will be a defining issue, probably less so in the House because the seats are extremely gerrymandered. But those Senate seats, that will be a much more interesting question, particularly post-Roe, and since the Jobs versus Jackson ruling. Alex, do you have a sense? Sorry. Clark, you want to get in here?
No. Okay. No, bring Alex in.
Alex, I did want to get a sense of how you're feeling about, I don't want to belabor the point, but as a father of a daughter, you know, how that has kind of shifted, you know, folks' voting patterns or how you approach particularly these issues. And again, after that, we want to talk a little bit about the insanity of a 10-year-old girl who was raped, who was denied an abortion in Ohio because they had some highly restrictive, they basically banned abortion under any cause, even including up to the life and safety of the mother.
Well, I mean, it's appalling what the court did, Supreme Court, not all of them, but, you know, it really was about power and justified by religious beliefs that have no place in the courtroom. It's very upsetting. I worry about the kind of future my daughter's going to have. Or she's looking to have less rights than she would have had she been born when I was born. You know, so that's pretty alarming. So.
I have no doubt that these rulings are going to fall, and they're going to fall soon, relatively soon. And again, I think if we had enforcement of the law, we would have all of these five, six justices would be impeached. Now, they wouldn't necessarily be removed, not with this Senate, but they would be indicted for all time because they lied.
Mm-hmm.
they perjured themselves. And I'm sure they'll come up with some, and what I, let me be clear, they all said it was settled law. And it was. They told the truth. It was settled law. But they didn't tell the truth when they said they would leave the settled law alone. They even would opine about how disruptive it would be and so on and so forth. Well, it's introduced chaos into order. That's not what conservative judges are supposed to do. That's not a conservative thing to do. That is a radical thing to do. That is what people who intend to disrupt the society and bend it to their way of thinking in a manner which they should have been taught in law school is not the purpose of the law. It's not an instrument of your choice and how you want the world to be because you think you're serving God. And why are you thinking that? Is it the sin of pride? Do you believe that God in his weakness needs your help, Amy Coney Barrett? Or Samuel Alito, you clowns? They have made a mockery, again, of the law. And they've made a mockery of the court. And they will certainly be overturned. And they will be disobeyed because no conscious, rational person can allow a 10-year-old girl to be raped and be forced to bear that child. And no conscious person of goodwill and good intent and who is conscious of any with any moral character would cause a woman to die because an abortion could not be performed to preserve her life. And by the way, I've said this before, my own mother was saved. Her life was saved by an abortion. And I would abort any fetus that threatened the life of any mother in such a circumstance. It's insane because also the mother would die and the child would have died. The fetus would have died, not the child. Please allow me to correct that. But we are living in an insane time, and it's an insane time caused by a rise of an extreme right-wing fascist radicalism. It's Christian fascism that has risen up in this country, and it is poison, and it is destruction, and we cannot survive with this still in place. So we've got to use democracy to push back and get the right people elected, get these people out, clear the Senate out, clear out all of those congressmen who asked for pardons because they were involved in crimes with Trump. And you have to prosecute Donald Trump.
So how about this notion, Alex, that our institutions are under attack? I frequently worry because, I mean, you could just take a look at the Supreme Court ratings, its trustworthiness. It went from 60% to 30% after this particular ruling. I mean, our institutions are very weak at this point. And so is chaos. And, you know, as I'm watching these hearings, as I'm watching historical events, I'm not worried about a major civil war, but I am very worried, as the folks who do watch this, that there will be paramilitary insurgencies running through our country. You know, you're going to see some things that you saw in Iraq with paramilitary groups threatening uprising. There's nothing going to be cogently organized to be able to overthrow or hold territory, but there is the potential for ongoing political violence and sectarian violence that's kind of coming forward. You know, we have two of three elements, so I'm a little bit scared. Alex, you know, what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I would agree with your concerns are valid. I think in my time that I've been alive, granted, you know, it's been maybe 10 years where I've been more politically and just socially conscious. There hasn't been this level of divisiveness and willingness to just, if not inflict harm, then just at least wish that harm on other individuals. Like, they've really created a divide, political divide, that almost has the same effects that, as you know, something that the racially charged hatred or other forms of bigotry. So it's getting to that point. Meanwhile, there's incidents that keep happening that sort of signal an uptick in violence. This on the heels of a pandemic where, you know, folks were really, folks' daily lives were really disrupted, impacted in many ways, financial losses, emotional losses. We have to be very careful because we're not in the best position to, as a society, to just really mitigate all those emotional and conflicts and sort of how to deflate that and how to think rationally, I think. And I think that's what's suffered the heaviest toll. And you're talking about institution. Well, I'll talk about rationality as an institution. And we've talked about this extensively in the past. Is folks just ignore or equate opinions with facts. And when you get to the point where you can't see the truth of what it is, but rather what you think or you wish it is, that solves a lot of problem.
Well, what I'm concerned about, Clark, and this leads into kind of what you've said, the recent poll came out, I'm quoting Time magazine, it said that 55% of white men feel that the American government is rigged against them. I think that's very dangerous and racialized. It's also beyond reality, I think, as a matter of fact. But as a white male who doesn't think the government's rigged against him, what are some of your thoughts?
Well, I think the threat of violence and the threat of this country falling is the government falling, is very, very, very real. And it is now a present reality. One of the things besides my absolutely detestation for the despicably inert Merrick Garland that has come out of these January 6th hearings, because it makes it so clear how obvious the crimes are and how monumental they are, but also how close they came. Trump lost his nerve. And I hate to put it that way because I don't want it to seem like, had he been more courageous, he would have won. But had they gone further and done more violence and given a grounds to declare martial law. And had he been more corrupt and put more of his cronies in place in the military, because they were there. Michael Flynn's brother was in the was serving. And by the way, Michael Flynn, what a piece of work. What an appalling person he is. He should be put back into active service and court-martialed and spend the rest of his life in the brig. That's what he should do. Traitor. Absolutely horrible person. But Trump could have won. And I think anybody who looks at this clearly and strategically the way I am could see the possibilities and what would be changed for the next time and incorporate all of those plans. I can see it completely, how it could have been successful. And it required a president to do that. I think another president who is so inclined, I don't think Trump is going to run. I don't think he is going to, even if he does run, he probably wouldn't win. But it would also be, if he did run, oh my gosh, that would be terrible. But I think I think the baggage is actually, and I was just thinking this today, and I hope I'm not fooling myself into, you know, what I'd like to be true rather than what probably will be true or is true. And that is that the baggage is too great and it can't lift it. And I have noticed the polling is moving away from Republicans are not. I think these hearings have actually split the party, and you've seen things like on Fox News, like, hey, this really isn't good, because they're reacting to it in real time and their reactions haven't been scripted yet. And you can see that they are at a loss to understand how this could possibly have happened in the way that it's just being described. But it sure seems like these are accurate representations, and they are brilliantly coming from almost all Republicans. All of the people testifying are Republicans. So if you were to ask me, what is the answer to this? How can we pull our society and our government back together from the brink, which is really where it is? And that is leadership. And you can see the power of leadership when you look at Donald Trump. I just saw an interview the other day with Alex Vindman, who was, you know, one of the Russian experts in the military, and he was drummed out because Trump didn't like what he said about Ukraine. So, but he was asked the question, when did all of this influence come into the Republican Party? And why did the Republican Party, like the rank and file of the party, change their attitude towards Russia and Vladimir Putin? And he says, I can tell you exactly when that happened. That happened when Donald Trump became president. And what Donald Trump, he's a genuine leader, because he's a con artist, and it's a form of leader. He's leading people in the wrong direction. He's a genuine leader for the most terrible purposes and outcomes. And a good leader could take it the other direction. Now, do we have good leaders? Do we have potential good candidates who could help heal this country and take it in a good direction? I'm sure, but they're not on the national stage. They are not positioned, and they do not have the standing to become a presidential candidate and therefore a president. And so do I think that Biden should run again? No.
There's a long time between now and the election. So I think one of the more interesting things, though, to your
point. He's proven. He's not a good leader.
I will leave that for future judgment. I don't know who else is there, as you said.
That is my assertion.
Well, as I've said, where's the next candidate? That's the question. I do want.
You know who the best? I'll tell you who the best candidate.
Oh, are we in reckless speculation season? This is reckless speculation.
I'm going to give you my reckless, if you want to call it that, but I don't think it. I think it's very well observed. The best candidate for president is Liz Cheney. Unfortunately, she's the wrong party. Look at her performance in front of that committee. She's devastating.
And I would be opposed to Liz Cheney on so many issues, Clark.
I know, on the issues. But look at her leadership. She's, whatever it is, she's got it. Is she right on policy? No. Is she a real American? Hell yes, she is.
That is a long shot. Let's hope she wins the election, her home election.
Wait a minute. I'm not saying that it's going to happen. I'm saying for a person who shows political courage, which is a leadership characteristic, for a person that is dynamic, who is well-spoken, who is a critical thinker, she's got all of that. She's just, I'm afraid, doesn't have the policy positions. But if you scan the horizon, that's the most obvious presidential timber that I see on the political stage.
I agree with you. I also have noted, particularly when you take a look at Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony, how she has protected young people and how people are loyal to her and not for false reasons. That's always something that it can be very presidential.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, they didn't know who it was. It kind of protected the quote-unquote bombshell, reading some of the reports. Maybe that's just my interpretation of it. But
I don't know. What you're saying makes no sense to me. I think it's great that a young person is courageous and patriotic, but it's certainly not unique to her. There's a lot of courageous young people. In fact, the cemeteries are filled with the war dead of many generations of young people who died for this country.
I want to go back to what we heard in the meeting, in the hearing today, where they discussed where Brad Parscale's text message was he really wants a second civil war. And I think any president who would want or welcome a second civil war should be indicted. But that's just me.
It's not just you. It's every sensible human being.
Thank you for backing me up, Clark.
I agree too. That's
Alex. Let's slightly change the topic a little bit, because we do like to fancy ourselves as a science program on occasion, or at least science news. Two big things this week: BA5 corona variant, which I think we've talked before, or the James Webb telescope. What do you want to talk about first, Alex?
Telescope, man, let's go. Switch to something positive.
Yeah, that thing's awesome. So tell us a little bit about the telescope, and you know what's been kind of going on in the science world.
I just first want to note just how much enthusiasm it's generated. I was looking at different feeds on different social media platforms, and a lot of friends, a lot of them not scientists, just other academics and non-academics alike, just posting and resharing a lot of those pictures. It's just amazing. So kudos to the team that was responsible for that instrumentation and mission. You know, it's just I think those kind of things fascinate and inspire a lot of other folks to pursue science. And so from that aspect, I think this is a very good thing, not only just from the actual discoveries that you see. The universe looks dusty.
So let me tell our listeners a little bit about what the James Webb Space Telescope is. I'm reading from the JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which is located in Pasadena, California. Shout out to Pasadena, Caltech, and the JPL. The James Webb Telescope is a large infrared optimized space telescope, which is launched into space above the radiation and magnetic fields of the Earth, and carries a large solar shade, so it blocks out anything but the infrared signals that are coming to it. It's the premier observatory for the next decade, and astronomers will be using it to study everything ranging from the Big Bang to the formation of solar systems. So I think this will be a very fruitful sort of project, and all the images that is coming back, some of the craziest images of star formations and nebulae, etc., just really sort of fascinating to see. Clark, have you seen any of those images across your news feed today?
I don't know why you think Alex is the only science guy in the on the panel here, but yeah, of course. And I studied physics for many years and astronomy, and of course, yes, I think this telescope is in itself one of the greatest achievements of mankind in human history. This has given us the eye of God to see across space and time and know something at the first glance of that first photo that President Biden unveiled last night. And that is, there absolutely is other life in the universe. And with given the expanse of time and the number of galaxies, I mean, it's not just planets, you see stars, but you see galaxies with, I mean, you have to use the term infinite, although it isn't infinite, but it might as well be. It just goes on and on and on beyond counting and beyond knowing. But what you do know and what you do see tells you that with that variation and with those many possibilities, there is absolutely other life. And there might be other life with their own telescope looking in our direction and thinking somebody has to be alive and sentient out there in the universe. By the way, I do remember what some scientists have said, including Stephen Hawking, that if there ever is alien contact, we'd better be very careful because the results for our planet might not be good ones.
Depends on who you come across.
Gorg. That's right.
Gorg.
Do you come across the Vulcans or the Gorn? If you've been watching Star Trek Discovery, if you've been watching Star Trek Strange New Worlds. You know, it depends on who you come across.
Well, some of these questions seem just imaginary, but last night they became less so.
I agree. It goes back to that famous photo, and I know this is all a bit existential, but it goes back to that famous Earthrise photo from the Apollo mission.
Right. From what?
From the Apollo missions. The Earthrise, okay. From, you know, where you have where, you know, the Earth is rising over the orbit of the moon from the Apollo command module. And you just see how, the smallness and the fragility of Earth. And when you see images deep into the cosmos, particularly of the Webb telescope from billions of years ago, You just feel slightly smaller and more precarious how we are. And, you know, for me, as someone who's been a science aficionado, certainly following up on astronomy, I always feel that our place is so tenuous in the grand scheme of the cosmos. And, you know, our fights at some times are so petty, right? Because we're fighting over greed and resources, and there's this vast cosmos out there. You know, it's one of my favorite things when I think about walking across the college campus sometimes, is we're stuck so often looking at the dirt and the ground and not looking up, you know, because of what grandeur awaits us there. I don't know, you know. And I think that's something very interesting to kind of ponder when I look at the space telescope and all the photos that come out of there. And I just think there's just times that you just want to be quiet and just think about what possibilities are out there. And I think that's a remarkable quality, and that's what makes us human and separates us from other animals on this planet.
Well, I'm very grateful that the United States, I must sound like a hyper patriot in this particular program. I'm also critical of the United States, but the United States has been, I think, because it's a democracy. And there was someone talking about, oh yes, the filmmaker, the British filmmaker who got the oh gosh, here's some road racing I'm witnessing like a few feet away. But he was given the special access during the whole run up to what Trump was going to Trump. He was supposed to record Trump's triumphant coup. And he said interviewed on CNN, he says, I don't think Donald Trump knows what democracy is. I actually think there's something to that. He doesn't know it. He doesn't appreciate it. Doesn't concern him. But it is that democracy that gave the United States the forward motion, the economic strength, the sense that everyone has a part of this society, and they all can play a role politically and in the economics of the country. And that gives the country a special energy and drive to the point where science can be funded. What country in the history of the world funded science at this level? That would be none other than the United States. And this achievement, which I describe as one of the greatest achievements in human history, the telescope, that cost billions of dollars. And it is the United States that funded that. And it is because we have this, we can see further than anyone has ever seen.
I would say that it was those old New Deal liberals who put us on the moon and sent us into space. That's not something minuscule.
These possibilities come from a society that only a democracy could do this. So this is why I think there's a lot in the United States that needs to be preserved and strengthened. I am definitely not a let's burn it all down, because it does good stuff like this, and it does good stuff like education and health and everything else that we do that allow people to live lives in which they can realize their greatest human potential. And that seems to me, that should be the goal of a society. That's the goal of a country. And that's not Donald Trump's goal. And that's why I say to hell with him.
Alex, what do you think about that? I think you're an educator, so the question really is, you know, how to sort of put these values in there. I heard this last week, I think, in the intervening 2 weeks, someone mentioned that the real problem we have in education today is not necessarily teaching facts and ideas. We have a real problem in critical thinking, but also a real problem in transmitting virtues, right? Hard work, democracy, fair play. These things seem to be also devalued at the same time with that. And so along with critical thinking, right? Especially in our 30-second media culture, how do you combat that as a college educator where, you know, you and I have seen our fair share of students when we've been teaching where they just want the answer. And it's like, it's not about just wanting the answer, right?
Well, yeah, I think and a lot of it, you know, comes to technology. We've been just finished praising technology for all those great achievements. But that creates this sort of saturation of information, data, whatever you want to call it, information that is readily accessible. So I think we've gotten to accustomed to just have immediate access to information that we don't no longer appreciate the process of producing that information. And the fact that you can get so much of it at once, some of it conflicting, some of it, you know, maybe not entirely vetted, can lead to misinformation or can sort of eliminates the need to really sit down and try to struggle with it. I think this takes us back to our grad school days when we were sit late at night watching Ninja Warrior and appreciating the process. Like nobody ever finished those challenges, but I think that's what made it so appealing about it. It's all about the process and the struggle. So I think it takes discipline to get new information and discoveries, but we've been conditioned to be consumers in almost every aspect of our lives that it's no different for access to information or knowledge, that we just think consuming knowledge is not the same as sort of producing knowledge, and that's really wisdom, you know. So it's the readily accessibility of the information is making it challenging. So it's sort of how we're going to sort of leverage and take advantage of all this information that we have to kind of go back and ground ourselves again in the fascination of discovery and appreciating that it's not something that necessarily needs to be immediate. And I don't know. Those are just my thoughts. Clark?
I agree that being grounded, in fact, I was thinking of being grounded is really not it's an important thing, and it's not, some people might think that it's too simple, mm-hmm. but it's not, because the ground, it's like it is, there's a universal truth in fundamentals, and they're fundamentals for a reason. And if you lose sight, you can lose sight as to what motivates you, what inspires you, and it is that simple thing of that simple discovery. And it's not just like, oh, I've seen a new plant that I haven't seen before, but I've learned how something works, like how something is engineered, how man can make something, to a machine to do a thing. but also how nature does its own creations to do a thing, and how those things work together to create an ecosystem. And within that, life is possible. So fundamentals and being grounded are essential to understanding higher levels of complexity. But I think everything that seems complex can be understood through its simple elements. And so I think when faced with complexity, what the educational process should show us is that there are simple components to the most complex problem, situation, or challenge. So I agree with you. And what I'm saying is that there is groundedness possible in all things.
Well, we only have a few minutes left, so we'll keep our positivity train going here, and let's end with our one good thing. What's your one good thing? That's our usual question. And my thing this week is I am off of work. So other than doing this radio station, I've been just doing a lot of woodworking and, you know, literally whittling my time away on vacation try to get some re-energizing.
That sounds very grounded.
Well, one is constantly humbled when you're trying to do woodworking and trying to pick it up when you're 40 years old. It's something that that we do. And I had the distinct pleasure this past week at a conference to meet Pat Hayashi, who retired as the associate president of the University of California, worked for Dick Atkinson. And Pat Hayashi had a second life as a actually well-renowned artist. He didn't pick that up until his 50s. So I got a 10-year start on Pat Hayashi doing other things and sort of crafting and doing other things other than they're related to my day work, which is very heady and kind of internal and all head work. So I've been kind of enjoying that and getting to play with power tools. And the one good thing about wood is if you somehow mess it up, it is compostable. So other than the terrible green effects that were used to produce dimensional lumber, I can, with good conscience, if I mess it up, it's going in the compost bin and having another life. So that's my one good thing for the week. Clark, Alex?
I guess I can go first, Brene. Ella, I wasn't able to join you guys last week because I was away for weddings. The first two different weddings. Congratulations to the Patels, Shivan and Wendy. They were students in one of my first classes that I taught. So it's amazing to see them come together. I could take some blame or responsibility in that because I think I'm the one that set up the seating arrangements for that class. So, you know, wow. In my profession, I'm a bit of a matchmaker.
Wow.
The other couple I want to, you know, wish, you know, congratulate are my compadre, Malachi Vandermark, and his wife, Micah, who were finally able to celebrate their wedding, which had been postponed because of COVID in the past. And it was just an amazing little mini getaway staycation for those two. On a personal, I think a good thing, I would say Thor, Love and Thunder. I think a great dad tell, I would say, to hit home. But yeah, those are my good things.
You got 3 minutes, Clark.
Okay, well, so I know that people think the January 6th thing is not entertainment, but for me, it is everything. It's entertainment, it's justice, it's revelation, it's education. I love the January 6th hearings and how they're being done, and because I think that they are crucial that knowledge is power, and what you need is the power of knowledge to sort through this terrible situation that we're in right now. And out of this just comes this one thing I want to tell Merrick Garland, if he's listening. It isn't politicizing or criminalizing politics when politicians are criminals. It's criminalizing criminality. That's it.
Well, that's a good one to end on. For Clark Price and Alex Cortez, I'm Tony Yang. I want to thank you for listening to the Happy Hour. Tune in next time for more of the Happy Hour. Have a good evening and goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Good night.